And Herman, the righty, deals to the plate.
Ground ball to third. Donaldson has it. Throws to first.
There he is! Perfection!
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
He's just so fun to watch at his craft.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Yeah, 'cause you know I'm on top. Yeah, there's no doubt in me.
Today's guests, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, Sam Amick, Packers linebacker Rashawn Gary, legendary broadcaster Bob Costas, actor Travis Van Winkle, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Thanks for joining us here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, live on the Roku channel, live on this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate, Sirius XM, Odyssey, and more. We say hello to everybody out there on this final Thursday of the month of June in 2023. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on this very program. Good to see you over there, Christopher Brockman. What's going on,
hey,
brother?
Hey, Rich, it's Blue Shirt Day. Glad that we both got the memo. We did not plan this.
We didn't plan it, but looks good on you, though.
Looks good on you.
Exactly.
Did you
Mike
get a free ball?
You're a handsome man. I just want to know.
Here's the difference, Mike. I'm almost sure I can say this with certainty about you, Chris. We paid for these shirts,
okay,
as opposed to whatever
100%.
You have on. Okay?
At least you got that going.
This
for
was paid for.
I mean, it was a discount, but it was my own money.
It's very good.
Yeah.
And but you got the whole Rain Man top button thing going on right now.
It just that looks better on me.
Okay, good. TJ Jefferson, how are you over there, sir?
Well,
good to
I'm
see
wearing
you.
A Stone Cold What t-shirt, and I'm pretty sure when I come to work, none of us will ever have the same t-shirt on. So there's that.
Okay, very good.
Know. Someday, you never know.
Okay, very good. So guess what, everybody? Baseball. It's just a
weird game.
Well, it is a weird
it's
game.
It's a weird game, man.
And but by that I mean this, is that we saw the 24th perfect game in the history of Major League Baseball last night. We saw that last night. Domingo Herman, he's the one who twirls it, fittingly wearing number zero, since that was the number in the hits and walks and errors columns for the New York Yankees last night in Oakland, where the night before they couldn't hit a lick.
they
lost to the worst team in baseball, scoring only one run on a solo shot by Josh Donaldson, who had only 8 hits in his previous 64 at-bats.
A guy everybody's waiting to get cut or released.
And, and he's the only one who provides a home run. And then the Yankees score 11 runs last night in support of Domingo Herman, who, again, it's only happened 24 times now. Last time it happened was 11 years ago when Felix Hernandez did it for the Seattle Mariners. And I don't know. My last name is Eisen, not Elias. I don't have, the research here other than just you guys having the old internet tubes and the Google machine.
That's all anybody has.
But is this the first perfect game in Major League Baseball history ever thrown by somebody who gave up 8 earned runs in the start before and lasted just 3 1/3 innings, as Herman did against Seattle? Baseball.
Probable.
And, I sit here and I think, okay, the previous Yankee perfect games thrown, we all know, Don Larson and David Wells and David Cohn. And the Yankees won the World Series in each of those instances.
Yep.
And obviously it was easier to win the World Series when Don Larson hit through his perfect game because he did it in the World Series. So it brought them 3 wins closer. I don't know if it was game one or not, just off the top of my head. But you can't sit here and say, oh, okay, that's it. Yanks are going to win the World Series this year because they have so many other problems. And that's interesting part about baseball. I'm looking up right now, and I see who the our competition is talking about right now. One is talking about Robert Kraft and the Patriots.
Nice.
And what it means for Belichick. And another guy's talking about how his smack off is taking place tomorrow.
Smack off's tomorrow.
And so
nice.
But that's what I mean. Like, baseball had a 24th perfect game thrown in its history last night.
Right.
And national media is like, shrugging it off. Now we're not. We love
baseball. We talk baseball more baseball here, I think, than most shows.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't know what our buddy DP led with today, but I'm sure he talked about this.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of bringing it all together here is in this day and age where we just want to instant gratification and we want to ruminate about whether a win or a loss means somebody's going to win it all or somebody has no shot to win it and there's going to be consequences. I see in the national media conversation, everybody talks about what's at stake for something. What's at stake? You see the bottom line on our television screens. What's at stake with such and such a team? When I see what's at stake, I mean, I think of jobs. I think, is a manager going to lose a job? A coach going to lose a job? A general manager going to lose a job? Like a quarterback getting cut? A center no longer being re-signed? Like that, when jobs, there's what's at stake. That's what's at stake in our worlds, right? Our jobs, our paychecks, our families, our houses, you know, apartments, whatever.
Yep.
I'm getting deep on you here for a perfect game. But back in the day, like if there was this 24/7, 365 nonstop, we're talking about sports machine, when even David Wells did it, or David Cohn did it, or back in the day, it would be leading all sports news and baseball might be like, what gives? Maybe it's because it was against the A's, who sometimes looks like fields a triple A team.
West Coast hurts too. How many Yankees fans stayed up to watch?
I get it, but I just think it's because in this day and age, we're all talking about what does it mean writ large. And in baseball, there's 162 games. There's another one. The Yankees and the A's, first pitch for their next game is in 3 hours.
Yeah.
If this was football, we'd be sitting on this for a week, churning it up.
That's a good point.
And if it was the NBA, we'd be sitting on it maybe for, 48 hours, 72 hours. Obviously, if it's the playoffs, it would be 4 days from now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. But it's involving a New York Yankee doing it. But it's also a guy that many people have never heard of and is probably available on any fantasy waiver wires right now.
I checked. He was available in mine.
But still, it's...
It's a 24th perfect game.
24.
There's only 24
of them. By the way, the first two shouldn't even count. They took place in 1880. So just talk about modern baseball. This is only the 22nd, really, of all time.
What do you got against 1880 baseball players, Chris? What's going on?
They still have to play the game.
Hot taken.
I mean, we would have been the greatest players in 1880.
You think so?
I do.
Really?
You know, it's kind of that thing when people say,
let's hop on the DeLorean with our mitts.
50s basketball players were like carpenters and plumbers. The thing is, those guys were the highest skill level at that particular time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's...
I think they're ripping heaters between pitchers. No gloves. I'm just saying, modern baseball, there's only been a handful. It's the hardest thing to do in all of sports.
That's why I'm thinking 1880 had to be hard too also. Especially since a perfect game isn't just about the pitcher. Ninth inning last night, there was a hot smash to Volpe.
Yes.
The last rookie shortstop. Well, the one that Donaldson picked, I thought that was a hit.
I thought it was a hit, yeah.
But both players needed to make the play.
Yep.
You know, the second out was a can of corn to Harrison Bader in center
first
field.
First out and the third out, I mean. Yeah.
And I honestly thought to myself, can this third out be another can of corn, please? And it was a hot smash that Donaldson snagged, that kind of snow coned it in his glove a little bit.
Yep.
And then you got to grip it,
throw.
You got to throw it.
Plus, it was Ruiz, who's one of the stolen base leaders in Major League Baseball. So the guy's fast. Who hit
the bases are bigger. And the third baseman's there instead of short right field now.
I don't know if you're like me, Rich. I remember, do you remember when Mike Mussina had 8 2/3 perfect against Boston?
I do.
And Crazy Carl Everett got the winning. I said it right to Sarah right before. I was like, man, I remember 8 2/3 Mussina against Boston.
Your heart's thumping.
Yeah. She was sitting there. We were watching it. And she's like, I'm nervous and I don't know why. I'm like, well, we're about to watch history, possibly.
Well, you and Sarah love baseball. And again, I'm still looking at our competition. They haven't talked about it yet. And I'm just sitting here thinking, because in this day and age where you just need to have a take, you need to have a conversation about something that's at stake, baseball doesn't really fit into that.
Well, it's June, a game that ultimately...
No, but it doesn't fit into it.
Well, it doesn't fit
into that world. And I'm wondering if that's part of the reason why baseball has lost a little bit of its national pastime consciousness. I'll tell you one thing, too. We see what you folks in the Rich Eisen Show listening and viewing audience like to hear from us, and Ohtani is one of them. And in terms of Ohtani, I know, TJ, you're hoping against hope. I am. You are.
Yep.
Met Yankee Red Sox fans.
Yep.
Del Tufo, Yankee fan, when he wants to wave it in your face. Okay.
Love you, man.
Chris. So we're all hoping. Dodger fans who, you know, they can't figure out how many yachts they can water ski behind with Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. Right?
Young pitching.
And here we go. They want him. I'm sure Giant fans who struck out on everybody this free agency season, including Carlos Correa, who they had. And then the Mets had. And then he wound up with the Twins. Just to name a few franchises, I'm sure there'll be more.
How many franchises are there in baseball? 32?
30 of them.
30. So I'd want to bet that all 30.
No, not the A's.
Well, I'm sure they still want them.
There's probably, yeah, no.
unless there was like $1 million beneath every empty seat in that stadium last night that's just being hidden there, just waiting for fans to find, just to see if they'll show up.
Like Ellen, like stuff. Look under your seat.
Look under your seat.
All right, so 29 out of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And by the way, I'm not blaming the A's fans for not showing up. I wouldn't show up either if you.
Yeah, it's not on the fans.
So. At any rate, could you imagine there was an A's fan who's just like, all right, before they go, I want to see them. And they go up last night and they see get perfect game. All right. The reason why
there
I bring 12, this up.
12,000 people there last night.
And many of them were Yankee fans.
I would say
all of them. I mean,
quarters.
It was loud. It
yeah.
was loud.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, we bring up Ohtani here because, you know, your New York Metropolitans might be in that mix.
Yeah.
They are. How many games out of the wild card right now are they? Eight now? Nine? Cohen, the owner. This is very Steinbrenner-esque. The owner of the Mets decided to have a press conference yesterday because it's gotten really bad.
8.5 out, wild card.
And this is what he had to say about it: the Mets actually reconfiguring their strategy around the deadline if things don't change. Listen to this.
I'm preparing my management team for all possibilities. You know, if we don't get better, you know, we have decisions to make at the trade deadline. And that's not my preferred end result, but you know, I'm preparing all contingencies, and we'll see where it goes. It's on the players, right? I mean, they're veterans; they've been there before. You know, I think they're, you know, these are, you know, players that have done it, and we'll see if they can get their act together and string together some wins. I can't pitch and I can't hit. Okay, so that's the way it goes, and you know, we're hoping for the best.
First of all, I hope it wasn't a Mets employee who was the one who laughed that I can't hit, I can't pitch, because that person's ass is on the street.
Yeah, they're gone.
Number two, even you, diehard Met fan, mm-hmm. would you want a Mets table like that, or is that too garish?
No, I'd take that.
Okay, number three, he's wearing a hat like he's a member of the team.
His team.
But number four, way to go to actually sit there and show, like, what's up.
Yeah.
Hal Steinbrenner called in a Michael Kay show. This guy's like, I'll take your questions, everybody.
Yeah, and it was totally unnecessary for him to have that.
No,
you know?
But again, he's got the Steinbrenner in him, which is like he's living and dying this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not his main source of income. It's his main source of pride. And you do wonder that about a lot of owners in this world, like Ballmer. Clippers aren't the main source of his income.
No.
But you.
They bring him joy.
It's probably the main source of pride for him.
And joy, yeah. Yeah.
He's so very happy. So congrats on having that owner of your team.
Especially when you consider what we had previous.
Oh, my God.
I mean, come on.
No question. But hearing that makes me wonder, are they gonna sit here over the next 3 weeks and say, let's at least sell some of these guys off. I'll take the hit in terms of the, you know, box office, fannies in the seats, to use a Steinbrenner phrase, back page, front page headlines, but I'm not made completely of money. Maybe half of my body is made of money, maybe 98% of it is made of money, but I'm going to pull back a little bit and make a run for Shohei Ohtani. And by make a run, like make it ready, like get my plans ready for the minute that this guy becomes a free agent. Or go ahead and spend the next 3 weeks telling my guys what is the plan to go get Ohtani. Because that's the answer. You know what the answer is? Not, apparently, is having two future first ballot Hall of Famers on the same staff together like it's the, what, 2009 yeah. Detroit Tigers? You know?
We're a little behind on...
You know what I mean? Like, you're a little bit behind putting Scherzer and Verlander in the same the same rotation. And the minute, you know it, I know it, the World Baseball Classic viewers know it, the minute Edwin Diaz hurt himself, this season just went right down the tubes. They lost their back end stopper. It messed with the entire bullpen, the entire plan. And then, of course, the fact that Scherzer and Verlander have been either suspended for a bit slash injured. And then the hitting on top of it. But the reason why I bring it up now is everything, as far as I'm concerned about this sport, baseball, is Ohtani related right now. Which, that's it. Which teams are going to go get him? What does it mean for the Angels this year and in a couple of weeks? How about us starting 16 minutes with baseball? Nobody else has talked about it yet. I'm keeping an eye on it.
And just to reiterate that table, I would love that table.
Okay. Just say you want that table in your house.
To talk, we went straight up the flowchart to talk Ohtani. Also because it's a 22nd anniversary of a film he once appeared in as a cameo, as himself.
Oh, starred.
Starred,
yeah,
you'd say?
Sure.
Bob Costas will be joining us to talk about Shohei Ohtani, as well as the 22nd anniversary of Pootie Tang.
Sadate.
Speaking of things other shows aren't talking
Speaking
about
Speaking of
today.
Things, yes, there we go. We're still on it. We're still on it.
Baseball and Pootie Tang.
Uh-huh. Travis Van Winkle, who is starring with Arnold Schwarzenegger in FUBAR on Netflix. He's in studio in hour number three on this program. But coming up is also we've got Rashawn Gary of the Green Bay Packers, who finished getting his degree from the Institution of Higher Learning that I love so much, University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. He's in hour number two. But let's take a break, because when we come back, as I see phone lines lit, which I love, 844-204-RICH, join a couple of phone lines that we have open. When we come back, Sam Amick of The Athletic will be joining us to talk about everything that's going on in the free agency world in the NBA that will break out writ large starting tomorrow. Sam Amick coming up.
Get an inside look at Hollywood with Michael Rosenbaum. Actress Kristen Ritter.
Your parents let you travel by yourself.
It was a different time.
They just put you on a train. As a 15-year-old girl, you went to New York.
I went on a bus, and I did get picked up at Port Authority. They thought I was a runaway.
What would they do?
They'd detain you and, like, get people on the phone, and then they finally let you go to your modeling job.
But how many times did it happen?
Once or twice.
It just seems like it wouldn't happen.
It happens, yeah.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Wherever you listen. For decades, Rolling Stone has set the bar for entertainment publications. Today, Rolling Stone Music Now takes over in podcast form. Songwriter and producer Jamie Hartman reacts to the Ed Sheeran verdict.
You need to create something new, and of course you're going to use traditional paths to get there. Are you going to sue the Rolling Stones for making a samba out of Sympathy for the Devil? You're going to sue Elvis Presley for writing Bossa Nova? It's like saying you're not allowed to use a pencil to create a piece of art.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
We are back here on the Rich Eisen Show. By the way, the Don Larson perfect game, I should know this.
October, Rich. It was in October.
No. The Don Larson perfect game was in a game five of a World Series. Pivotal game five. The Dodgers took the Brooklyn Dodgers took the first two. Yankees took the next two.
And then he threw a perfect game in game
five. Five.
That's pretty wild.
And then the Dodgers won the next game 1-0 in Ebbets Field in 10 innings. Dude. And then the Yankees won game 7 in Brooklyn 9-0 to win the World Series.
9-0. Wow.
And here's the difference. You want to talk about the difference between stadiums?
Brooklyn Dodgers, choke job.
My mom and dad, would tell me all about Ebbets Field. They grew up in Brooklyn, obviously,
iconic.
In the shadow, right? and the attendance in Ebbets Field, the max attendance of the World Series was 36,000.
Nice.
The max attendance in the Yankee Stadium for the World Series Game 3 was 73,000. Should talk about a difference atmosphere.
Yeah, giant.
It was big.
73,000. That's like SoFi.
Yeah. That's probably more than SoFi.
I know. And the difference, well, and interestingly enough, Game 4 and Game 5 was less attendance. So it must have been SoFi. People sold their tickets. Do you see how I bring things around from show to show?
Mike, that's messed up.
By the way, I'm going to give you props. Remember you said yesterday about Brockman not going to Disneyland, and you did the Fred Flintstone, the Yabba Dabba Doo, slide down the
table. Slide off the dinosaur.
Yo. I wanted to call you last night giving props on that, but I knew you wouldn't answer. But
what are you talking about?
That was funny, man.
You're the one who doesn't answer phones. Chris, who's more likely to answer telephone when you call it, me or him?
You always
Thank
answer.
You. Yeah.
You're always on the phone.
Oh, wow. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions. We're going to put a pin in that for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Probably even pins to put into snarky things Chris says. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. I added those words to the read.
Oh.
Joining us here now from The Athletic on the outset of a very big weekend in the NBA is Sam Amick back here on the program. How you doing, Sam?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Appreciate you bet. It. Absolutely. What happened in the meeting with Blazers general manager Joe Cronin, Damian Lillard, and his agent Aaron Goodwin, best you can tell, that led to a three-sentence statement from the general manager 48 hours ago? What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, best I can tell, it was more of the same, to be honest with you. I think it was Damian's way of, you know, reminding the organization, reminding Joe, like he had said publicly in the weeks heading into the draft, that he's looking for elite, high-level veteran talent to play with as opposed to youngsters. Now, the nuance there is that there's not any acrimony on Damian's part toward, like, he's excited about Scoot Henderson. You know, he's excited about the other two guys they got as well to a degree. But it just that's not the equation that will kind of compel him to stop thinking about a possible trade request. So that meeting, to me, it's an interesting one because what jumped out at me is that Cronin's statement says we remain committed to building a winner around Damian, and I thought was, you know, to me it was interesting because it didn't say title contender, it said winner. And, you know, they've had winners there for a long time, winning teams. So it is still a to-be-determined situation where I think once we get into early July, it's going to be on Damian again to decide what he wants to do here.
So the question I have for you here, Sam, and if you can help us with this, so many folks cannot compute in this day and age, this 21st century NBA, where players of Damian Lillard's stature, when they want out, they'll just flat out say it. They'll make a statement. They'll put it on Twitter. Right. They'll have somebody like yourself maybe even report it. You know, but why is Damian like threatening to get to that point? You know, why is he tick this way, best you can tell, Sam?
To me, I think he's trying to kind of exercise his influence and his power on the franchise, and to be honest, it's a little bit LeBron-esque, probably not as passive aggressive, but like the thing LeBron has done for eons of, you know, he doesn't need to come out and say I'm not in love with this roster. He has other ways to get that message across and then to make it clear to the powers that be that if you don't, you know, do some of the stuff that I want, then we probably have a problem. I think that's why he does it. And he, you know, Damian tries to walk that line, it seems like, anyway, because he has so much love for the fan base in the city, and that stuff is very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And also, let's not forget, not to go too macro, but, you know, when they had, you know, kind of the ill-fated exit of Neil O'Shea, their previous GM, and Joe Cronin was elevated during that controversy a couple of years ago, you know, Joe was a guy that Damian kind of endorsed and that, you know, seemed to rock with and feel like, you know, this would be a better pathway forward than it was headed towards with Neil. And so to a degree, he's built at least parts of this environment and this ecosystem. And I think to your question about why he's handling it the way he is, I think he's holding out hope that they swing a trade that makes it easier for him to say, you know what, I'm fine. Let's stay here in Portland.
So heart of hearts, and I do believe you've done some reporting on this, Sam Amick of The Athletic here on the Rich Eisen Show. What is the scenario by which Lillard is sitting back going, attaboy, Joe Cronin, I'm here. You got me. This is it. Well done. You executed the vision that I knew you could. Give me that scenario that's in his brain right now.
Well, the three that I wrote on this week that was definitely, like you said, from reporting, the three players were Draymond Green, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam. So the first one, the idea of, and Jeremy Grant would be the fourth because he's on that roster for now, but in a couple of days he's not. And it's very important for them to re-sign Jeremy. Now they have his bird rights, so they can cut that check and hold on to him. But the first scenario was Jeremy comes back and they somehow find a way to swing what would likely have to be a sign and trade for Draymond. Well, a couple of problems with that. All indications are that Draymond wants to stay with the Warriors. All indications are that he's going to stay with the Warriors. So I don't see that one happening. But to your question, like, that is one where he would say, all right, I'm good. The Raptors guys are in that same vein. But, you know, again, the obstacle is Masai Ujiri, who runs the Raptors. He has been testing the market on guys like OG and Siakam for literally almost 2 years now, but he has not shown, he's been very, very patient, very stubborn in trade talks with everybody. So I have no reason to think they can pull either of those scenarios off. So that to me is where, whenever I get asked right now this week about where I think it's headed, I think it's at least headed toward Damian having to decide. It's almost like, is he going to call his own bluff? Or is he going to, just kind of back off? But Dame's going to have to decide because I do not think the type of move that will make the decision for him is on the horizon here.
So how much time do you think he gave Joe Cronin? I know you mentioned early July a few minutes ago, but even early July, there might be some moves made by other teams that could take away assets that the Blazers would accept or for Lillard. Or maneuvers that would obviously teams would move heaven and earth to get Damian Lillard if he in fact made it known he wanted out of Portland. But how much time did he give him, do you think?
So I'm trying to make sure my memory's accurate here, and I think it is. So on Friday, I had indicated to somebody who would know the answer to that question that, that my sense was that we would know what direction this was going to go in the matter of 2 weeks. So that's on Friday. It's now obviously been a week since then. I said 2 weeks and got pushed back saying, no, it'll be sooner. So
wow.
To me, yeah. And that's, again, people, stuff is fluid. Who knows how Damian wakes up every morning feeling. But at that time, the indication was that, essentially, like by July, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, that you're either going to see a bunch of Blazers action that looks exciting and makes him feel like, all right, this is what I was talking about, whether trade or somehow free agency-wise, even though they're restricted on the cap side of things. But I do think it's coming to a head. But to me, again, keep pounding this point, like the unique part is, do I think there's a scenario where Dame tries to push this thing and then still doesn't have it in him to actually make the request? Like, of course, I don't know what percentage odds I give it, but I do think that scenario is still on the table too.
All right, so which teams are sitting there knife and fork in hand and napkin tucked into their shirt ready for the news? What do you got for me on that front?
I mean, it's the usual suspects. I mean, Miami and Brooklyn mainly. But, like in this column I wrote on Monday, it was a deliberate choice to not include Brooklyn because to me, it's Brooklyn is there, not saying, never say never, but it's like Brooklyn is probably largely there for just the sake of like it's leverage or just call it a negotiation. The Blazers don't want to be backed into a corner. But I do think in terms of what Damian would like, if he did choose to raise his hand and say, I'm done with the Portland chapter, I think it's, Miami is out ahead by a long shot. Now, that being said, you know, friend and colleague Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated had written today that the Blazers are very lukewarm on the prospect of taking Tyler Hero back in that kind of a trade. And it's like, yet again, that's all these obstacles all over the place, because that is pretty hard to envision a Heat deal that makes Damian and the Heat happy that does not involve Tyler coming back to Portland.
Sam Amick, The Athletic senior NBA writer here on the Rich Eisen Show. So Harden and Kyrie are the other big fish here, or are we missing anybody right now going into this
weekend?
Well,
I mean, Chris Middleton's an interesting one because, A, you know, he didn't play up to his standards last season, and then B, just you kind of assume he's going back to the Bucks. He's just a matter of what number. But Middleton's a big name, you know. But, yeah, those two guys, I mean, James, and is it going to be Philly? Is it going to be Houston? You know, it's funny, though, maybe I have recency bias, but I feel like this particular free agency period, a lot of the reporting all over the place is kind of unofficially already, you know, indicating where guys are going to go. Like right now there's a lot of loud noise about James being back in Philly, about Kyrie staying in Dallas. You know, I mean, you've got the not as many star player names, but the Houston stuff is to me very interesting, a boatload of money. And guys like, you know, Fred VanVleet is on that free agency short list, and he very well might wind up in a Rockets jersey. Dylan Brooks has just kind of created his own lane in NBA culture, if you will, and Dylan has been tied to the Rockets. So, you know, this is not the most star-studded free agency crop, but there's a lot of names out there.
Sure, I hear you, and I'm just wondering if the Nuggets winning it all, and obviously you got to have a unicorn like Jokic and then somebody like Murray perform as well as he's performed coming back from surgery. But the fact that they were a team, right, that they were a team built,
right.
Is that a copycat situation? Because I understand the Suns just went ahead and did the whole super team move with Bradley Beal, but I'm wondering if we're seeing a changing of the way that front offices look at things because of what the Nuggets have just done, Sam.
I think, Rich, you're going to have a mixed bag on that front. Mm-hmm. Like, when the Suns move happened, one of my immediate takeaways, like a lot of people, was like, man, like, nobody learned from the Nuggets? Like, what are we doing here? You know, this is the same old kind of recreate the Heat Big Three type of approach. But I for sure think the Nuggets blueprint is going to have an impact. And on top of that, the new CBA is, you know, far more Nuggets-esque, if that makes sense, than it is the Phoenix approach, meaning that it is so punitive to get into the luxury tax that you simply, like, the idea of, I mean, having three stars on $30+ million contracts is extremely untenable. And these days, when you have the numbers being even higher, like we've been talking about Dame, at the end of Dame's contract, he's going to make $63 million. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of numbers, when you're talking about, you know, a cap that is, you know, in the low 100s, are not tenable. So, yeah, the Nuggets takeaways are, you know, find a core, hopefully through the draft, and then build around them with economical contracts. And, you know, they're going to try to hold on to Bruce Brown in this offseason. I think, surprisingly, they might be able to. But depth matters, continuity matters, chemistry matters, and that's why, like, going into next year, who knows? The Suns could be the odds makers' favorite for the title. And for me, and kind of my two cents, I certainly would not agree with that. And we saw last year how much continuity mattered, and that part plays a big part.
Okay, so you would not agree with the Nuggets being the odds-on favorite, is what you're saying?
No, I'm sorry. I'm saying the Suns. I'm saying
if
Vegas liked the Suns, that's what I would disagree with. That, you know, having just covered the finals and having just seen even beyond the Nuggets, Rich, you're talking about, you know, the Lakers, for example, to their credit, in a very short time span, they found a way to really kind of click with that new group that they had with, you know, Rui Hachimura and D'Angelo Russell before the playoffs playing well and all those things. They got momentum. And then the West Finals showed you that you run into a buzzsaw that not only has talent that's on par with you, but has years of kind of slow growth and you know, the pain that came with playoff failures. And you saw the contrast. You saw the difference in the void, not the void, the vast kind of space between them. So, yeah, the Nuggets approach, and this is why, to me, yeah, going into next year, they for sure would be the front runners.
So then give me a team that's being – would the Lakers be that team that's following that approach? Because you already – you know, you already heard Rob Pelinka say, we're not planning on adding a third, if you will, major star. We just want to keep the core together, which is amazing that the Lakers have a core, right? and want to keep it, which you flash back to 1 year ago, we're watching Russ – Westbrook standing in the corner of the gym and just down the street here in El Segundo, California, listening to Darvin Ham talk about how he's going to have to buy into coming off the bench. You know what I mean? Like, it's wild where the Lakers currently are and what appears to be the LeBron last year.
I agree with you more. Yeah, 100%. It's funny because I thought about that this morning. I might write something on the Lakers soon. But, like, I feel like they, and mainly perhaps even LeBron, have lost sight of where they were last summer and early this season and starting 2-10. And so the idea of, you know, re-signing Reeves, re-signing Hachimura, re-signing Russell perhaps, and growing, you know, what they had in the second half of last season does make a lot of sense to me. But it's like, oh, by the way, you know, LeBron has not technically publicly told the world that he's for sure coming back. He is widely expected to be coming back, that he's not retiring. But that whole retirement subplot, I always felt, was kind of his way of saying, I'm not sure what I think of this roster. And, you know, I understand that it might not be the number one roster in the NBA, but it's wildly better than it was, like you said, early last season. And I do think it has potential if you give it a little bit of time. You know, he's not at a place in his career where he, where time is on his side, and I get that, but I do for sure think that it's their best option right now, and I think they're probably handling it the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have had a camera on LeBron. I don't know, who was the one who told him Chris Paul was going to the Warriors? Who was the one who broke that news to him? You know what I mean? Like, that would be an interesting moment in the world.
No question. And I think that is, you know, if you could have given him – something like that might have calmed the waters. And who knows if they have something else in the cards once free agency hits or trade-wise. But, you know, and I get that. But, again, objectively and non-emotionally, you look at that. And Chris, I actually think, could be good for the Warriors. But, you know, you're talking about a 38-year-old Chris Paul. You know, that's the Lakers have a good thing going. And I think if LeBron gets behind it, I think they're going to have a good year.
All right, Sam, last one for you as we go into this very busy weekend. Give me the off-the-radar, and I know you don't traffic in rumor, you traffic in facts, but you got something for me that we keep an eye on that could go totally haywire this weekend that we're not thinking about right now?
I mean, this is probably a little more macro than you're looking for, but okay. I think it's still compelling. Is I'm just looking at the New Orleans situation. And how do they play it? You know, they were not successful moving up in the draft and try, you know, who knows to what degree they shopped Zion, or, you know, and all indications were that Brandon Ingram was actually more untouchable than Zion was. But they just, anytime you have a situation like that where if you think about it, Rich, man, like 2 months into last regular season, this was a team that was on top of the West and was, you know, unofficially getting crowned as like a West contender from henceforth. And next thing you know, the wheels are falling off. The roster is not what you thought it was going to be, mainly because of health. They have since had some turmoil. Their head of training was kind of shown the exits. Teresa Weatherspoon, you know, one of Zion's confidants and an assistant coach, surprisingly, was not there anymore. Just a lot of upheaval, and I think a divide between ownership, management, and Zion. And so that always is a recipe for something. I don't know what it leads to, but I don't think that Dave Griffin and that Pelicans group are going to want to go into next season with that same exact group together.
Interesting. What about a smart, targeted veteran that wants to play with Victor Wembanyama and Pop in San Antonio? Not like a game changer, right? But it just seems it would be such a smart Spurs move to find a savvy veteran that wants to join this young team just at the outset of a huge moment for the Spurs. That just sounds like a Spurs move to me, Sam. You know?
It does, and I'm trying to think of who that might be. I mean, you know, one guy, not quite probably the level that you're talking about, but, you know, like I could see a Harrison Barnes out there, except that, you know, again, all signs are that Harrison's probably staying in Sacramento.
Right.
You know, I don't know who that guy is, but I agree. And it's also interesting, like, I think the Spurs, they want to start winning games, and they want Victor to have momentum in the early part of his career, but right. I don't think that they are trying to go out and get the kind of game-changing free agent that it takes them completely out of the lottery balls, if you know what I mean.
No, I do.
It's going to be a slow growth. Yeah.
Yeah, but just so, it just strikes me, just go find out one guy who can fill it up and be smart and maybe whisper in the kid's ear a little bit, you know, and get off to a decent start. That's the sort of thing I'm looking at, you know. Never know.
Yes, I agree. Although, man, if they don't find that guy, it doesn't get much better than having guys like Tim Duncan around and Dave Robinson around. And he's not going to be lacking for wisdom in that environment. And I think it's so cool. I mean, he said the other day in one of his interviews, I think this was actually on the J.J. Redick podcast, that if he, and I don't think he's just blowing smoke, he said, if you could have told me going in to just pick a team that I wanted to be on, that I would have picked San Antonio.
That
was so neat because, it makes sense. But you know how it is. Like, a lot of times, you know, the young players are just looking at the big cities. And so to hear him say that, no, it was small market San Antonio with all that history and that he had such an awareness of what they had accomplished and why that would be a good environment for him, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it helps to have Tony Parker and Boris Diaw sign your checks. You know, you know what I mean? That gives you an idea.
Yes, there is that.
Thanks for the call, Sam. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Let's talk soon.
You got it. Thanks, Rich.
You bet. Sam Amick, must follow at @Sam_Amick on Twitter, at @SRAmick on Instagram, and, of course, The Athletic for all of Sam's latest. Draymond, Jeremy Grant, he's cool. Siakam, Jeremy Grant, he's cool. OG Anunoby, he's cool. Does that really, I mean, that's why you're saying, screw it, walk in there, Dracarys, burn it down, say, I'm out. Send me to Miami.
100%. Are we serious about winning?
And I don't blame if the Blazers tell them, we don't need Tyler Hero. How about that guy who thinks he's defensive player of the year? And that's the guy that, you know, Dame wants to play with.
Right. They're friends.
Not talking about Jimmy Butler either. All right, let's take a break here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Rashawn Gary and Bob Costas and Pootie Tang. Yes, I said those words. We'll talk, you know. Jordan Love with Rashawn Gary and Pootie Tang with Bob Costas. That's how we're rolling here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show.
Are you currently enjoying this show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep, going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So, switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Here is the connection.
Yes, Bob.
Between me and J.B. Smoove. It involves the cult classic Pootie Tang. J.B. Smoove is in Pootie Tang.
Yes.
And it goes without saying that without me, Pootie Tang is nothing.
There's not. You put the Tang in Pootie Tang.
I did.
I bet.
I did, just like the astronauts.
Hey, what's going on?
J.B. J.B. Smoove.
And I'm back there. You're
my man.
No, I'm back there. He was trash talking me, man. I mean,
I wasn't trash talking you.
I look up to you, man.
I was talking you up.
No, I look up to you while I'm looking down to you.
Anyone who looks up to me is a person I admire.
Do you have any good from the set stories of Pootie Tang?
You know, we were never on the set together.
Always.
Yeah.
There's some great stories of Pootie Tang. Any man who can fight with a belt. right? How do you not have great stories? The man had a ponytail and a belt and had his own language. How do you not build a movie on that platform and have success? You know, it's a cult classic. People sit in their basement smoking the funny stuff while they watch it.
Yeah, and you don't even need the funny stuff.
No, you
don't. Although it helps.
It does help. It's a great movie.
I'd be reunited.
Yes,
with
indeed,
J.B. Smoove.
My brother, we are back.
My man.
We are back.
By the way, Bob said Pootie Tang 5 times during that interview.
And that's so that's 22 fewer times than Marshawn Lynch said he was there to be fined.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign your pity on a runny kind, brother. And if you want to try to stop me, I got to say the name of
him. You got to say the name.
What is happening right now?
Hi, yes, Bob will be joining us with yet more tales from the set of Pootie Tang, 22 years ago, debuting in a theater near you. That's coming up in hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show. Back here on our radio program with our stream on the Roku channel. Eric in New York, first in, first up. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys, how's everybody doing?
Where in New York are you calling in from, Eric? What do you got? Where exactly?
Manhattan.
Very good. How are you, Eric? What's going on?
I'm great, thanks. But I want to pose something to you.
Okay.
Talking about Hal and the Yankees, you know, I thought, boy, you know, they're not making the World Series for years. It's Cashman, it's Boone, yada, yada. That interview on the Michael Kay show told me it was Hal. He's a Steinbrenner, not exactly a George. But may I propose that who cares what people are doing on the field? The advertising money's coming in. The Yes app ratings are coming in. Amazon's coming in. Concession sales are coming in. Tell me, does it seem to you, as it does to some of us fans here, is this guy just in for the money and saying, well, we had a record year, but who cares about the team?
No, I don't know. I've never met him. And I just brought up the fact earlier on in the show, you know, Steve Cohen did a press conference and Hal called into a radio show. And there's a difference right there. George would have called into a radio show. He would have called into multiple radio shows. He would have had his guy, Harold Rubenstein, send out a press release to the Daily News, the New York Post, and Newsday, and then he would have held a press conference. And that would have been too much in a way, maybe? I don't know. It is a different way of going about it where he will just let it play out. And I don't know what makes him tick. All I know is he's kept the team. You know, I mean, it is still a family operation, technically. So I don't know. I do wish he had a little bit more of Steve Cohen in him where a loss affects him personally, that it means that much to him, or at least express that. And I guess maybe, as I pointed out at the top of the show, that this is you're marathoning, you're not sprinting in baseball. One night you have one hit that goes over the wall and that's your only run of the game. Next night you score 11. One start, you give up 8 runs. Next one, you throw a perfect game. But that shows inconsistency. I need to see a little bit better consistency from the Yankees, and the Tampa Bay Rays are certainly consistent. Orioles are more consistent than the Yanks. The Rangers are more consistent than the Yanks. The Braves are more consistent than the Yanks. The Arizona Diamondbacks are right now more consistent than the New York Yankees. So that's a problem. How does that sound for a very long-winded answer to you?
No, it's you're absolutely right. I think that these other owners, especially Steve Cohen, I mean, the guy saying, take, you know, here's a blank check, write a number. But with Hal, you know, oh, Cashman's a member of the family. I think Boone is doing great. There was a time when every year, I mean, even when I was a kid, are the Yankees supposed to be in the World Series every year? They're supposed to be winning every year? And listen, a few years, okay, I understand that, but a decade where the Yankees didn't win or were even in the World Series?
Yeah, it's definitely not our lifetime, Eric. Thank you very much. There's Eric in Manhattan right here on the program filling up Chris Brockman's mug with Yankee tears. Same thing with you over there. But the Yanks are in the mix. Yanks are in the mix. They just need Aaron Judge to get back and see what happens there. But and Giancarlo Stanton, overall, he has had some great October nights. But overall, since he's been a Yankee, totally disappointing. The whole Yankee team has been disappointing. Don't you remember you thought Derek Jeter gave him away for nothing to the Yankees, right?
I don't think that. He did.
Or he got $300 million off his payroll. He got him gone. And look at how the Marlins are faring right now. And I'm not saying that's Jeter.
I'm not giving Jeter credit for that.
But Jeter cleared the runway for the rebuild. I'm not giving Jeter credit for this rebuild and choosing the players that are on the field right now.
Yeah.
But Stanton got cleared off that payroll.
Stanton's hitting 197
Dude,
right now.
If he keeps on doing this, his average might mimic his exit velocity. I mean, the number of times is, well, that ground ball was hit 115 miles an hour. Who cares?
More strikeouts than hits for Stanton with
the Yankees. He's having a rough year right now. Again.
Have him play the Mets every game.
There you go. I know. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Rashawn Gary of the Packers coming up.
Yeah, he's in his sixth season with the Yankees, only has 118 home runs. He certainly didn't expect a 20 home run a year average when you trade for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were so upset. You're like, Yankees got him for nothing. Jeter gave him away. But if you have a monster-sized contract on your ledger and the guy does not – he underperforms. He doesn't even perform the same way as he was performing.
Just can't stay healthy. I mean, 18 games in 2019, he played – I mean, everyone only played a shortened season in 2020, but he only played 23 games. And only 32 games this year. I mean, that's not what you're signing up for. When he's been healthy, he's performed 38 home runs in 18, 35 in 21, 31 in 22. That's what you're expecting.
But the problem is it's homer or nothing.
Like but that's baseball now.
Nah, not what I'm seeing. Some of the that doesn't look like that way for me with the Rays. Look like that way for me.
I guess, well,
for the Reds.
The Rays doesn't lead that the way league in home runs.
Doesn't look that way for me. But they also produce runs with just moving people around. They don't just sit back and wait for the home run. That's what the Yankees do. It's infuriating. It's like every year.
Yeah.
Somebody gets on, we need a two-run homer. Somebody gets on, then another person walks. The other day when Harrison Bader hit a double to put them up in the eighth inning, it's just like, wow, I don't notice what that is. Didn't leave the yard and the Yankees actually got two runs for it? What is that?
Conspiracy theories. Paranormal. UFOs.
Science teacher Andrew Greenwood stated that a child ran into his classroom and was hysterically screaming and talking about the flying saucer outside.
Hundreds of children ran out of their classrooms to go outside and see this unidentified flying object that was just above the school.
Just imagine, a bunch of kids running out of school. Most of them probably just ran home.
Theories of the Third Kind on YouTube or wherever you listen.